Chapter 17. For the next few days, the cavalry was mounted and on the move from before dawn until it was too dark to see each night. Even though Henry had spent weeks in the saddle as he traveled from Virginia to Tennessee, he had never in his life done so much hard riding, and sore muscles announced that fact to him every morning when he crawled out of his blankets and got ready for another day of skirmishing with the Yankees. It had been Hood's plan to get around the Yankees while Schofield was still in the village of Pulaski. However, Schofield's scouts must have brought him word of the Confederate movements, because the Federals had pulled out and were heading north toward the town of Columbia as fast as they could. Hood wanted the pair of bridges over the Duck River at Columbia, and his columns were in good position to get them, if only Schofield could be delayed. Unfortunately, the Federal cavalry did a good job of keeping Forrest occupied, so that the Confederate troopers were unable to range as far ahead as they would have liked. Still, Forrest's men made it as far as the outskirts of Columbia before they were forced back. Much to Forrest's disgust, Schofield's infantry was able to march into the town and start erecting fortifications along its southern edge. Hood had lost the first leg of this desperate race, but the objectives could still be won. Facing the possibility of crossings by the Confederates, either upstream or down, or both, Schofield decided to abandon the newly built breastworks and withdraw to the northern bank of the river. He did so, and the last of his men to cross set fire to the bridges behind them. Hood's infantry moved into Columbia, occupying the town without a shot being fired. That wasn't going to do them much good, however, with the Yankees now safely on the other side of the river. On November 28th, Henry found himself, along with his new friends and the rest of Forrest's cavalry, riding east along the Duck River, looking for a crossing so they could ford and establish a foothold from which an attack on Schofield's rear could be launched. The heavens were still cloaked with clouds and spat down snow intermittently. At times during the past few days, the weather had warmed above freezing, but any thawing of the roads just made the mud worse. These were terrible conditions for fighting a war, Henry thought, even though with his limited military experience, he wondered if there was such a thing as good weather for a war. He had not seen Forrest himself since that first night. Today, Henry and his companions rode near the front of the cavalry column. He could see Forrest taking the lead with several trusted subordinates. Merle and the others had been with Forrest for quite a while, and they remembered Corey, although they had not known him personally. From what they said, Corey had served as a scout for Forrest and had been something of a protege to the general. Henry didn't figure he would ever command that sort of trust and respect from Forrest, but that was all right. All he wanted was to do his part against the Yankees and make it through the rest of the war alive so he could go home one of these days. Another thing he had discovered was that the strain of almost constant skirmishing with the Federals made it difficult to dwell on the past. Thoughts of Polly still came to him, of course. He knew he would never lose the memories of what they had had together, or the regrets for what they had been denied. But the pain within him had dulled to a bearable level now. He didn't know if that was because of the circumstances, or the simple passage of time, or a combination of the two. But he was grateful for it, regardless of the cause. Late in the afternoon, the riders came to a spot where the river looked shallow enough to ford. Forrest sent some of the men across, waiting just long enough to see that they were going to make it, then rode on with the others. Again, a few miles farther on, they found another ford, and again Forrest split his party. Henry and his tent mates were with the final group that rode on. The sound of gunshots drifted through the cold air, following them.
"Reckon the boys north of the river have run into the Yanks," Merle said. "Schofield's probably got cavalry strung out around here, keeping an eye out for us."
It was nearly dusk when the last group of Confederate riders crossed the river with Forrest himself at their head. Henry shivered as cold water rose over the tops of his boots. The horses had to swim for a short distance. Hood's infantry would not be able to cross here without a bridge of some sort. Luckily, the engineers were skilled at their job and could lay down a pontoon bridge over a stream this size in less than a day. The Yankees, however, didn't wait until everyone was out of the water. Carbines began to spit fire from the trees on the northern bank of the Duck. With his famous twin long-barreled pistols in his hands, Forrest led the charge against them. His guns barked wickedly as he swept into the trees with a large group of men thundering along right behind him. Henry had picked up a 7-shot Spencer carbine and some ammunition from a dead Yankee trooper a couple of days earlier. The Spencer was quite a prize and was envied by his friends. He was a little surprised none of the officers tried to claim it, but they just congratulated him on his find. Now, he held the weapon and ammo pouch well out of the water as he guided the horse the last few feet. The horse came out onto the bank and wanted to pause and shake, but Henry didn't give the animal the chance to do so. Instead, he sent the horse leaping forward after Forrest. Beside him, Foreman let out an eager yip that was echoed by Merle and Carruthers. They were impatient to get into the fight that was going on up ahead. The Spencer was fully loaded. Henry held it in one hand and used the other on the reins as he guided the mount through the trees. He hoped to grow comfortable enough on horseback that someday he could use just his knees to guide the horse in battle, leaving both hands free for the carbine. Now, though, he was still worried about falling off or having the horse run away with him. The Yankees were running already before Forrest's sharp onslaught, Henry saw. He brought the horse to a stop and drew a bead on one of the fleeing troopers. For a second, he hesitated, knowing that he was about to shoot a man in the back. Then he pressed the Spencer's trigger and felt the recoil against his shoulder. He saw the man topple off his horse. The sight brought a twinge of guilt, but Henry suppressed it. This was war, after all. Killing Yankees was why he was here. Ever since the beginning of the war, he had wanted to get in on the fighting, and thought it was unfair that Will and Mac pressured him to stay home. Now that he was in the thick of it, now that his hands had blood on them, he wished more than anything else that he was back home in Virginia. He supposed that, until the time came, a man never knew how the killing was going to affect him. But it was easier now than it had been a few days earlier. That probably meant something, but Henry didn't know if he liked it or not. Hood's engineers were right on Forrest's tail. Even as the cavalry was clearing out the Yankees on the north side of the river, the engineers moved in to start work on the bridges they were charged with building. At each of the three fords, the pontoons went down and planks were hammered onto them. The bridges took shape with amazing swiftness, so that by midnight, infantrymen were tramping over them, crossing the Duck River. There was no time to rest. After spending most of the night in the saddle, the Confederate horsemen were on the move again early the next morning, November 29th. The Union cavalry, which had been strung out along the river, had congregated in response to the crossings made by Forrest's men the day before, and now they were all together again, forming a formidable force. To Forrest, however, the concentration of the Yankees just meant they would be easier to drive before him. That was what happened that morning. Time and again, Henry and the men with him rode up on a lagging bunch of Federal troopers and prodded them north with an exchange of gunfire. Clearly the Yankees had no interest in standing and fighting on this day. It was around midday when Forrest turned away from the pursuit, leaving only a small group of men to continue harassing the Yankees. Forrest swung to the west with the rest of the cavalry and headed for the settlement of Spring Hill. Henry would not have known that, being unfamiliar with Tennessee, if Merle hadn't told him. All these troopers knew the area intimately.
Spring Hill's on the turnpike twixt Columbia and Franklin, Merle explained. And past Franklin, the road runs on up right into Nashville. Schofield must be running up that turnpike as fast as his stubby little legs will carry him.
Henry didn't know anything about the Yankee general. Didn't know if Schofield had stubby legs or not. He didn't care, either. He was growing numb from the constant riding and fighting. Some Yankee general had called Forrest that devil, and Henry could understand why. Forrest and the men with him rode like the devil, and they fought like the devil, too. They were on a road called Rally Hill Pike, and had just passed an old toll gate when Forrest sent a large group of cavalry sweeping forward toward a stand of trees. For the past little while, guns had been popping up ahead as Confederate scouts ran into Yankee skirmishers. Most of the Federal cavalry was northeast of here, Henry knew, but he supposed some of the blue-clad troopers could have worked their way back toward Spring Hill